The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.
I'm Ronan O'Gara and Alan Quinlan. Good morning to you.
Morning.
Morning, Adrian.
How are you getting? When it says ads on the screen in front of me, lads, I just got to roll with it. That's the way we work around here. But how's life?
Very well, yeah, very well. Getting ready for a big game against Toulouse tomorrow night. So had a good week's preparation, and weather's getting better. First sights of summer. So pepping my step, Adrian.
Good. And why wouldn't you have? Like, you're the man running the team at the top of the table in one of the most competitive competitions in world rugby. It's all turning up Millhouse for you.
That's a gross exaggeration, to be fair. I think one of the things I learned 20 years ago is, and you don't appreciate it at a young age, I hugely value, I suppose, a united staff, a united group, a united approach. You know, I look at it in the soccer now, all the, I suppose, glory goes to Guardiola and all these, but you can be sure behind all these, it's a really good team. And, you know, there's so much for me of interest in terms of how you get the best out of your staff, because your staff is like another team. And the team that play, actually, I think they get their drive from what they see with their staff. So there's a lot of mini games going on in the big game, Adrian, that's what I'm trying to say. And it's good. I think what's important at the minute is probably what we're doing Monday to Friday is quite good. And then you're not looking for miracles on a Saturday, which was kind of the feeling I got a bit last year and being involved with the team. So enjoyable, challenging, but loads to do.
Yeah, you obviously, we were talking to Philippe Saint-André about you a couple of weeks ago, actually, and just to get his impressions of how you were going, and he was very impressed, which seems to be the general sense of how you're getting on in France, obviously, and beat Stade last weekend, same points as Racing, I think, at the top of the table, but with the game in hand. So, but that point that you made was interesting, Ronan, in relation to, like, last year, you're almost going out with your fingers crossed a little bit. Now it feels like as if your team and you are at home in that company.
I suppose, for me, I'm huge in preparation. I think, you know, having spent time in the Crusaders, it redefined my philosophy, I suppose, and doing the simple things well. I really, really do believe that, but you got to train that, and you got to train that at intensity. And I'm nearly gone away from kind of even full-on training sessions against opposition. If we can't do it at full speed against ourselves, we have no chance. So that's probably an area of interest for me at the minute, is trying to get my team up to speed with just the ball, not defenders. Because if they can't do it with just the ball, how can they do it against defenders? So sometimes early in the week, we try to go from point A to maybe point D without putting in the necessary prep work to give players confidence. So I'm at probably an interesting junction in my coaching mind, short term, about what's the best approach for getting performance at the weekend.
Yeah, and even in the context of what's going on in relation to the Bouclier, like, not a club that has tended to win a lot of them. Are you trying to quell? Is there excitement around? Are you trying to quell that? Are you harnessing it?
But sure, that's why you get involved. You want them to have interest. You want them to dream. You want them to have something to seek for. Yeah, the history of the club, It's come from the Pro D2, obviously, and it's never won a Bouclier, so that has to be the goal. Can it be achieved? It can. Will it be difficult? Of course it can, but sure, you want to do that. And you know, I think a great saying that I live by is pressure is a privilege. It's not a stress, it's not a hindrance, it's not something that you shy away from. You go after these things, and you want to be as best prepared you can to give yourselves that option of doing it.
Andy Farrell must feel exceptionally privileged at the minute.
Yeah, well, that's like comparing a Ferrari to a Mini. You know, it's different. It's different leagues. It's test rugby is very, very different. It's people, I think, seem to struggle to appreciate the step up from Pro 14, let alone to European rugby, is a gulf. But the gulf from European rugby to Test rugby is very, very different. And I think you can see that it's probably, you know, from the Irish point of view, for people watching, I think what I see, it's a team that it's not in top form and it's missing a little bit of confidence. But that happens. These things, what this team has done, and it's a lot of the same players, they were exceptionally good a few years ago. But a few years ago, unfortunately, doesn't count anymore because the show moves on and it goes on. But it's a lot with the same players. So these guys, you know, where are they going into game three? They haven't won the first two. So it's only normal that when you have that, I suppose, automatic kind of instinctive feeling among players, you can see that that isn't there. And sometimes those no-look passes, they just stick. At the minute, they're not sticking, or actually probably where we are. No, they're not even attempting to give them. So,
yeah,
confidence is down. And that's the one of the beauties of sport for me, is the fact that, you know, I can relate it to goal picking myself. Some days, Adrian, it's just so easy. You can do it with your eyes closed. And then other days, you feel you're executing the exact same skill and you're going, why is that ball bloody going to the left, you know? But it applies to all the micro skills of the game as well.
Can I ask you on that one then, like, just because in relation, you were talking about like the offloading game and almost the style of play, and I had a wry grin when I saw the team yesterday and I saw that there was 11 players in the 15. I thought, no better two people to be talking to this morning on the basis of that. But it's an all-Leinster backline running. So what happens here now? Like, are we going to see more Leinster-style rugby at the weekend to play to those strengths, or is Andy Farrell going to stick to what we've seen up to now, which hasn't been an offloading Leinster type of game, really?
No, well, I suppose the way you can flip that is too is that it's a lot of Leinster players playing at a level higher. It's easier for those guys to do what they do in a blue jersey because the standard is a lower. They're playing against club players, Adrian, in a blue jersey. In a green jersey, they're playing against Test players. So it'll be a lot more difficult tomorrow, irrespective of the opposition. You know what I mean? Italy are the weaker team, the weakest team in the competition. So there will be stuff tomorrow that you can get away with that you wouldn't get away with against the four other nations. But Italy, from what I've seen in Twickenham, are improving, and I wouldn't underestimate them potentially as much as I was in previous months. So they looked quite impressive in some aspects against England. But they, unfortunately, when you speak of confidence, they have no idea how to win a game because they're never close to winning a game in Six Nations. So that's the dilemma facing them. I don't think you'd see the style change at all, because the back line or the backs don't change the style. The style of how you play a game, Adrian, is dependent on your front five, basically, in terms of how you get them approaching a contact situation. Do you get them to secure the ball going into contact, or do you want them to try and stay on their feet and play out of the tackle, which would be not, I suppose, a priority in Irish rugby up to now? The prime example of that would be a team like Toulouse, who it's nearly disallowed for them to go to ground, and they try to keep the ball alive at all costs. And I have the words of Axel ringing in my ears when I think of Toulouse, because they hate rucking. You got to get them to the ground. While the flip side of Ireland is they love a ruck and they love ball presentation and securing that in terms of keeping a continuity game going. But unfortunately, at times, I think the Irish team have suffered with a bluntness because of their prioritising of the ball carrier and securing the ruck.
Can I just bring in Alan Quinlan? Good morning to Alan as well.
Morning, lads.
On that one. So, Quinny.
How are you doing, lads?
Quinny, when we talk about, as Adrian mentioned there, the Irish style of play, and there's been a bit of talk this week about the attacking philosophy, and Andy Dunn was kind of talking about how maybe Ireland can look to the Super League teams like the Crusaders, who I guess are the complete reverse of the Schmidt and Andy Farrell eras, in that their whole operation is based on having less of the ball. Is that something we can take inspiration from, that maybe the attacking philosophy in this Irish team needs a bit of a change?
I think it's not a first and second and third phase for me, because even in Super Rugby, you still have to, you know, set up different sort of attack, whether you crash up the middle or whether you go wide straight off a line-out or scrum. It's really after multiple phases what the shape is like and what the ambition is there, because, you know, I'd be interested to hear what Rog thinks about this. Being, you know, having played with him and having been on the team where he's kicked down the field, and we've loved those kicks. Ireland have kicked 82 times in two games, 35 against Wales and 47 against France, which is a lot for me. So if you're talking about attack shape and attacking teams and being more expansive, creating opportunities, well, it's hard to do when the kicks are that much. Now, the conditions tailor how you play in these games, and they're kind of cup games. Six Nations are cup games. You know, Scotland kicked the ball 43 times when they beat England in Twickenham. They won 11-6, and everybody thinks that's a brilliant game because it was competitive, it was enthralling, it was intensive. The underdog was winning. The conditions got very bad in the second half, but you didn't really hear people after the game saying that was a really negative game. Everyone I met and spoke to after says that was a brilliant game, brilliant game, brilliant game. So it's a type of kicks, I think, and the attacking kicks. You're not just kicking. Sometimes you're kicking for territory. Sometimes you're kicking to regain the ball with box kicks and up and unders. But we probably not seen enough of intelligent crossfield kicks and stuff like that. Something that Sexton has done with Leinster, and Rog mentions the fact it's a different level. You don't get those kind of weak edges in international rugby and wingers who are very vulnerable, if you like. But going back to the point of attack, I think for me, and Rog is definitely more of an expert, he's coaching now, but I think it's the shape after the second, third, fourth and fifth phase. What kind of attack shape, what kind of width are they keeping? Are they pulling out to the edges, you know, getting players to square up and run and challenge that defensive line? Because you can't just throw the ball around willy-nilly a first or second phase and think, oh, that's expansive rugby and that's great. You've got to get the fundamentals right, your set piece, your scrum, your breakdown, all that kind of stuff. But I think it's, you know, anytime I ever played in France and you play French teams, when they get their tails up, every pass seems to stick. Every offload seems to be a brilliant offload. And the offloading part of it is something that's, it's probably programmed into us for as young players. And it probably got me into trouble at times over my career. I always wanted to do a big skip 20-yard pass, an offload, a crossfield kick. And, you know, I'd end up fighting with coaches and coaches dropping me or giving out to me about not sticking to the system. So we're very systematic in the Northern Hemisphere. And that was probably one of my own downfalls at times in the way I played. I could, you know, be standing out in the wing or trying to do a crossfield kick. I remember we played Montauban and Limerick one time in the European Cup on a Friday night, round one, and I give a 20-yard pass from midfield, and their fullback intercepted. He scores in the corner, and there's an eerie silence at Thomond Park because we're behind. There's only a couple of minutes to go, and the man on the other end of the camera got a penalty to get us out, get me out of trouble and get the team out of trouble. So you can't just throw the ball around. But it's just that kind of approach. Are we running into contact? Are you looking to give a little tip-on pass? Are you putting footwork in there? And, you know, I'm not saying you have to go totally away because it's absolutely rubbish if you can't just suddenly say every time you carry a ball or every time a forward gets a ball that he has to look for offloads and look for space. But I just think it's a mentality thing and it's an individual thing in players that, you know, and coaches probably get a rap for this at times, but when you have expansively minded players who want to work little mini plays amongst themselves, it's much easier then to kind of create space. And all coaches love if teams go forward and create line breaks and stuff like that. So we're very good at the other stuff, as Rod says, the breakdown, the set piece, all that stuff we're pretty solid at. But it's getting to the next level now of really asking questions of defence. And it's that shape. It's not just your back line. It's the shape when things get disjointed, little pods working together, creating little mini plays, props, hookers, back rows, and trying to get those offloads. And you look at the first try France got against us in Dublin. It came off the back of brilliant line-out attack, offloads from Jalibert, from DuPont sniping. And, you know, in the end, there's probably a defensive mistake on Olivon from Gibson Park. He came up and in and he panicked. And that can happen, players, for sure. But he scores in the corner. When we had the lion's share of possession, pressure, intensity, all that stuff in the first half, and they just go up the field and they do something like that. They had 12 offloads in that game. We have 9 offloads in 2 games, you know, alone. So yeah, it kind of tells its own story.
Well, on that point, because it was something you touched on as well, Ronan, and feel free to thread in the point about us, whether we kick too much or not. Definitely interested to get your thoughts on that. But you mentioned about that same point in relation to prioritising carrying the ball, at maybe sometimes at the expense of an offload. You just had to look at the end, maybe the Wales game, where we were going back, if anything, trying to protect the ball, but going back. How easily is that fixed, or what do you do?
I think you have a responsibility to probably, I think in terms of the in the now moment, how easily is it changed? I don't think you can. I think you have to chip away with video sessions in terms of, I suppose, informing your players with certain pictures about this for me looks like a 70-30 opportunity for playing the ball on a tackle. This for me, you need to talk. You need to, you're probably not in best position with your feet or whatever to get to win the contact, to win the collision. So every time you have a chance of playing the ball out of the contact, you need to be in control of the ball. You need to know exactly which arm you're carrying with. Are you an inside or an outside threat being hit? So you have an awful lot of guys, those mini decisions to make in your head before you're seeing what picture is in front of you. So, you know, I think it's the younger the player, the easier it is to change, but it takes 3 weeks to change a habit. So in terms of these guys have been doing it so long, for so many years, for so well under Joe Schmidt too, because people, I think with Joe moving on, have had a capacity to knock since he's left. But like, he was a brilliant coach. Why was he a brilliant coach? Because he got buy-in from his players, and you could identify that's a Joe Schmidt way of playing the game. And they were ruthlessly good at it and ruthlessly accurate and efficient, with, I suppose, the asterisk of it not working in the World Cup. And that's the only, for me, I suppose, debate you can have. But you could see that was a Joe Schmidt team because of the way they played and how ruthlessly accurate they were around the breakdown and keeping ball and just churning and grinding teams down. But they were epitomised by the performance in the Aviva that night against the All Blacks. That rugby was scintillating because it was a bit of everything. It was a change in the point of attack. It was winning collisions, and it was moving the ball away from the point of contact at speed. I agree with Quinny's point. I think where what you see in the Six Nations is there's games within the game, and the fact that the weather, i.e. England, Scotland, like you can train, and all these test teams have, you know what I mean, indoor centres of performance, of excellence, where they probably have a roof over their head. A roof over your head for training and for catching passing, there's no decision-making or brain power used in terms of catching and passing. It's very, very easy. You go out into a wet pitch with a wet ball, your skills are certainly under pressure. And with line speed nowadays, it's nearly advantage defence. That's where the kicking game comes into it. But kicking aimlessly will never work, Adrian. And that's the example of England, France and Twickenham when France sent over their second, third team and they conceded a last minute try for, wasn't it a draw, was it? Or to force extra time in the Autumn's Nation Cup. Because prior to that, there was a study that came out that basically all the data was showing the more you kick, the more you win. But that would have been a great example, if I suppose, for people, purists of the game, that if that stat was beaten on that day and France had beaten England, because England were so negative, George Ford didn't play what was in front of him. He completely adhered to kicking the letter off the ball and kicking inaccurately. And that's, I think, what's very exciting nowadays from a coaching point of view, is with teams loading the front line, there has to be chip space and there has to be backfield space. So you either kick the air, you kick the grass, or you kick the second chip line. So for that, everyone expects it to be the kicker, but that's where the Dougie Howlett and the Tupokis of the world, in my world, come into it in terms of identifying space and the run and communication. Sometimes you don't have to speak. You just got to do something with your hands, or you got to do something with your eyes for the playmaker to enable him to see what you're thinking, i.e. identification of space.
Can I ask you, just before we wrap with you, two quick questions about the more selection issues than anything, but in relation to the 10, like, he's gone for Billy Burns again in the 23, Johnny Sexton starts. A lot of people would have liked to have seen maybe him freshen that up. I don't know, this is a pure fag packet calculation, but we might have somewhere in the region of 20 games before the next World Cup. It's not a lot of games to blood new players. It looks like he's, and Joey Carberry obviously is the second leg of this, back in the bench for Munster tonight, but it looks like he's all in on Billy Burns. Are you seeing what Andy Farrell is seeing?
I think he's all in the short term, and I think you have to be all in. Otherwise, if Billy Burns detects a tiny chink of lack of confidence from his head coach, Billy Burns won't be able to perform to his optimum. So for me, that's a skill of loyalty, of understanding the person before the player in terms of backing Billy Burns.
But that notwithstanding, Ronan, is he the best? Is he our best backup option right now in terms of looking ahead to the next 2-3 years or beyond?
That's most definitely open for debate, Adrian. I like what Ross Byrne has done in the short term in terms of, I think, he's underappreciated, I think, his steadiness. I think, for me, that five with Johnny works well. I would say all roads most definitely lean to getting Joey Carberry fit. And I think to end on a note of positivity in terms of to put a backline up against that backline that are playing tomorrow, you can go Murray, Carberry, Bundiaki, Farrell, Earls, Conway, Stockdale. I wouldn't be too sure who'd win that. If you were to go six scrums on the left-hand side, six scrums on the right-hand side, and one breath, the backline break down the other. So what we are now is that there's competition for places, and the guys that get the nod tomorrow know that they have to perform, which is, I think, a good place to be.
Yeah, all right. And you're excited about Joey Carberry back in the bench, I presume?
Oh, yeah, it's huge. He's the try he created for Earlsey and Murrayfield when his agility, his capacity to explode through tackles, his guile on the ball is something that the country, the national team has missed. What we do need now is extreme patience and understanding that when you're off for 15 months, you don't come back to where you were straight away, especially lower leg injuries. And, you know, it's the same for poor Dan Levy, who's hopefully will get there, but he's another player that sticks out with a massive asterisk that Ireland need.
Yeah, well, look, I hope that privilege of pressure keeps rolling right through to the end of the season, and good luck against Toulouse at the weekend. Quinny's staying with us, but Ronan, for the minute, thanks a million.
See you, boys. Cheers.
Thanks a lot. One thing, Quinny, I wanted to pick up on as well was in relation to, I know Ronan himself wrote in the Examiner last weekend about the 9 and 10 selections being very different things, and that while it might be right, for example, to take Sexton out, conversely, that we, you know, maybe should stick with Conor Murray. And the question I wanted to ask you was, I saw Jamie Roberts talking during the week about Murray not necessarily fitting that thread of a point that we've been talking about here in relation to the offloading, that you know, you need somebody who's in, like the one that stood out for me was John Cooney for one of the Ulster tries last weekend. He's running ahead of the ball carrier. It's not the sort of game we tend to see from Conor Murray, as in he if we want to see an offloading quick game that we've just been discussing, Conor Murray is not the right player. What's your view on that?
I'm not sure he's not the right player. I think he's probably, his biggest strength in the last, and with the success for Ireland, has been his kicking game, his defensive work, his simplicity of passing, all that kind of stuff. I remember when Conor Murray came on to training, and, you know, in fairness, it is a long time ago with Munster, before I retired. He was there for a couple of seasons, and he was in a young kid. And I remember doing, playing tip rugby in the warm-ups and stuff like that. And this guy was incredible running around, making line breaks, stepping, bouncing out of tackles. And we haven't seen enough of that from Conor Murray over the years, because we probably haven't had to see it in the successful period with Ireland, because the game was... ball was quick, and it was just moving as quickly as he could, hit runners, hit Sexton. But I still think he can do that, but we haven't seen it. Okay, and I do get your point. John Cooney is different. Gibson Park is different. And I thought Gibson Park did that really well and coming off the bench in Wales and in the French game as well, the way he can step, hold a little defender, find a little pocket. Can Conor Murray do more of that? Yes, like he can, but it's probably, at this stage of his career, it's probably not that natural to him to do that, because he's played with Munster as well in a team that have, you know, been quite pragmatic in their approach, particularly in the period under Rassie, which was very successful, and he brought a team from a level that we didn't expect to get to a different level, getting to the semi-final of Europe and the final of the Pro 14, and they were brilliant that year, and I think it was 2016-17 season. And so Conor Murray is—it's something he's not had to do. Can he do more of it? Yes, I think so. But probably the others do it a little bit more naturally, and it's probably their biggest strength. Where his strength, like Conor Murray's over the years, has been like having an extra defender and an extra back rower, and his kicking game has been a big part of Ireland's success. And going back to the 82 kicks, I'm not knocking them completely for the 82 kicks, but I'd like to see that level a little bit lower and have a confidence to hold on to the ball more. And like I said, you know, Scotland kicked the ball 43 times against England and nobody was complaining after the game. I experienced this a couple of years ago over in Twickenham. England beat France. They scored 6 or 7 tries. They hammered them, something in the mid-40s, again, kicking the ball. Nobody talks about all these kicks when you're winning, when you're on the front foot. And particularly in the tight games in the Six Nations, a try can make a massive difference. You know, if James Lowe gets that try against France in the first half, it's probably a different game. Ireland, if they get ahead, well, every one of those 45 kicks then, even the bad ones, are good ones, if you know what I mean. Because, like Farage said, in the conditions, you're kind of chasing. And sometimes when you're ahead, it's easier to defend and keep your shape and force the opposition. Then France are forcing some of those offloads and Ireland get a big lift out of one of those turnovers if the ball goes loose. But that's getting away from the point of Conor Murray. But you need options. Look at New Zealand with Smith and I'm going blank now with the other scrum half for New Zealand. You can't even think of his name now.
No, but the options
of at scrum half and half back, you have to have depth there and be able to make changes. And most teams do that, particularly if you want to change up the way you want to play. And we've seen for too long now the level between Sexton and Murray and the rest is too big. And it's a debate that's gone on. And you know, if you had guys springing off the bench in 50, 60 minutes who are top-class international players and guys who can make a real difference, that would enhance the team. And, you know, so Gibson Park has an ability to do that now and put more pressure on Conor Murray. And, you know, he's the one in possession now, albeit Murray's injured. And, you know, the fly half position the same in the next couple of years to try and get more players come through there. And it's brilliant to have Carberry back, as Rod said.
Yeah, we shall see how that pans out, I think, later tonight. And then, obviously, the Ireland game of the weekend. Quinny, thanks, Millie. We'll catch up with you early next week.
Cheers. Thanks, lads.
Thanks a lot, Alan Quinlan on the line. And Ronan O'Gara, before that, looking ahead to the weekend's action, there is probably another hour and a half that you could have spoken to both of them about 100 other topics, and time, unfortunately, has beaten us to it. Plenty of good comments coming in relation to the rugby and our Roy King conversation at the top of the show as well, and we'll bring you those in just a little bit.
The OTB Podcast Network, with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.